sahanavavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahavīryam karavavahai, tejasvinavadhikamastamavidvishavahai. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So the rules of begging and eating. Having taken a staff according to his choice, having worshipped the sun and walked around the fire, turning his right hand towards it, the student should beg alms according to the prescribed rule. Riti, walking around the fire means respectful circumambulation, keeping the right hand towards the fire and walking clockwise. An initiated Brahmin should beg, beginning his request with the word lady, bhavati, a kshatriya placing the word lady in the middle, but a vaishya placing it at the end of the formula. Brahmin will say, bhavati bhiksham dehi, good lady, alms please give. A kshatriya, bhiksham bhavati dehi, alms, good lady, please give. And a vaishya, bhiksham dehi bhavati, alms, alms please give, good lady. This one was in the middle. Okay, bhavati. Yeah, that one is that so here we see the Brahmin is starting with the element of the respect to the individual, the person, so bhavati, then giving alms please give, right? So you're starting with the respect to the person, then the activity that's going to be performed, and then what it is you desire from that, right? That is given. The kshatriya, then, he brings out the point first. Alms, that's what we're dealing with. Good lady, please give. And then the vaishya, it's alms, please give, you know, good lady. You understand the difference? So the one is starting with that respectful element. The second is starting with what's getting done. And the third is starting with the benefits being gained, and then please. Does that make sense? So according to the nature, then it's actually being established. Right? Does this make sense? Let him first beg food from his mother, or his sister, or of his own maternal aunt, or of some other female who will not disgrace him by refusal. The first begging is part of the Upanayanam samskara. So within the samskara, then the first begging means should be auspicious, it should give result. So therefore, generally, it's his own mother, someone, some lady he knows that will give something. Right? Because so then, you know, the process is started auspiciously. Because otherwise, when you go out door to door, you don't know if they'll give or not. That's the whole point of begging, is it creates the humility, because you're not in control of it. Right? You're not in control of it. So there is the element of being, they say, refused. Right? Now, having collected as much food as is required from several persons, and having announced it without guile to his teacher, let him eat, turning his face towards the east and having purified himself by sipping water. So how much is required? Then he informs the teacher about that. without any, you know, any kind of trickery or anything. And then, after purifying himself, he sits, you know, in an auspicious way to honor, you know, whatever he's gained. Right? His meal will procure long life if he eats facing the east, fame if he turns to the south, prosperity if he turns to the west, truthfulness if he faces the north. So in any direction that you honor Prashad, there'll be benefit. Right, so you get the spiritual benefit and whatever material benefit. So that's the point, is that devotional service already includes all auspiciousness. So there's not a problem that there'll be something else. Let a twice-born man always eat his food with concentrated mind. After performing an ablution, and after he has eaten, let him duly cleanse himself with water and sprinkle the cavities of his head. So then he's always going to be focused on eating, and that's the main thing of what's happening there, right? So you won't be having conversations about management or other, you know, things that are, you won't discuss any issues, you won't discuss anything that'll distract from the meal. Conversations at the meal are pleasant, that attend the meal and everything like that, because remember, it is Krishna's the center of attention here, and we're rendering service to him. So as Prashad, the service we're rendering is eating. Right? So then whatever goes along with that will make it pleasant, will make it nice. Then that's what we're doing. This idea that eating is maya. No, the Shastras define that maya is when you don't understand the connection to Krishna. Not that it tastes nice and you're having a pleasant time in the association of Vaishnavas. That's not defined as maya. Mayavadis will have you believe it's maya. But it's not maya. Right? This idea is, no, austerity is devotional service. No, serving Krishna is devotional service. Austerity can be engaged. But austerity itself is not devotional service. Otherwise, good work is automatically devotional service. Helping the lady across the old street is devotional service. You know, giving clothes to the Salvation Army is devotional service. You know, going to a meeting of AA and kind of like helping people out is devotional service. We understand how it works? Right? Being a vigilante on your block, going around to make sure that there's no guys that are going to come and bother your neighborhood, you know, is devotional service. You know what I'm saying? Therefore, it's not that it's good that makes it devotional service. The consciousness that you understand is connected to Krishna that makes it devotional service. Right? So that means then, that's the point, is eating is the central point. And then whatever helps that. Nice arrangements, nice serving, nice conversation, nice company. This all then adds to the environment of the service of taking prashad, right? Does that make sense? So it's not a matter of, it means technically you can engage the power lunch in Krishna's service, of course, because you're having a meeting, and since you have to eat sometime, then we eat that, because we would eat, you know, manage all the way through, but people have to eat. It's a strange phenomenon. So just in the middle of that, we'll have a meal. You can do that, but the point is then it's the management that's being engaged in Krishna's service. But the eating process is only engaged because you need food to be able to manage. Right? But respecting Krishna as prashad, that didn't really feature. You know what I'm saying? So you're getting minimal out of that service. Does that make sense? And then afterwards, then he properly cleans himself. So he's clean before, and he cleans himself afterwards.
That's why we say honoring prasad, not eating.
Yeah, that's why we say honoring prasad, not eating. Let him always worship his food and eat it without contempt. When he sees it, let him rejoice, show a pleased face, and pray that he may always obtain it. So, whatever you get, be happy. Right? You know, in other words, if you're not happy with it, don't eat it. Right? Think, oh no, this is not up to... Then don't eat it. That's the simple point. Not that you're going to eat it anyway, but you're going to grumble about it. Because the point is it's Krishna, so it's Krishna's arranged. So be happy with what you get. Right? So now here's the point. We may say, okay, well that's nice. Okay, that's good culture. But food that is always worshipped gives strength and manly vigor. But eaten irreverently, it destroys them both. Right? Now at this point we may go, well that's fanatic, but it doesn't matter. That's the rule. You know, if I say, if you go through a red light, then you'll be given a ticket. No, that's fanatic. No, that's the rule. You know, you don't pay your taxes, the IRS guys show up on your door. No, but that's fanatic, Prabhu. We just chant Hare Krishna. We don't care for the rules. You understand? We never apply this in material laws, but we always apply it in God's laws. Somehow or another, just because we whimsically don't like it, or it's beyond our capacity. No, but I always just, you know, eat whatever I want to eat, and, you know, what I don't want to eat, I complain about. You know what I'm saying? In other words, that person who, while you're eating, complains about what you're eating, don't eat with them ever again, if you want to be healthy, right? So the first person to not eat with is the health food freak. Unless, you know, if you're drinking wheatgrass and eating, you know, spirulina mixed in with, you know, some other things like that, then fine, then they'll just glorify it like anything. Then you'll do okay. But if you're sitting there and eating, oh, this is so rich, oh, that's so heavy, that's so bad for the hell, you know, how you got to get fat. Don't eat with those persons ever again. You should follow a very strict rule, because the point is Krishna is the center, and therefore he's glorified. Does this make sense? It's just etiquette. It's just how things work. No one likes it if, you know, you're there in the company, but they're grumbling that, well, you know, how come he had to come along and all that? I'm listening. No, but I mean, it's, you know, I mean, we're here, we had this party for, you know, why you're here, you know. Are you going to appreciate it? No, so if Krishna as Prasad is the third wheel in the relationship there, he's not going to like it. Very simple points. So if it's eaten with respect, then you will be nourished. It's eaten without respect, then you won't. You'll get sick. I haven't seen a person that always talks all kinds of weird things and criticizes the food and is always weird that is healthy. I've not seen one. Think about it. Just go back about the people when you go and eat with them. They're always talking about, oh, this is so rich, oh, that's so fat, oh, this is bad, oh, where is this now? Think about it. Are they healthy? No, I can't think of one. So this is why. It's the law. Right? Remember what we're reading here. These are laws. These aren't a matter of discussion whether they're laws or not. You know, it's just like if I brought, you know, the local, you know, statutes from the local municipalities, their laws about, you know, sanitation and cutting the lawn and, you know, having crossing the street and lights and all this and parking. And I just went through them one after another, right? And we're discussing why they're like that. So we can discuss why they're like that, why we should follow, what's the benefit. But we can't say that, no, we don't have to follow this law. It's not an option. Does that make sense? So these laws aren't an option. If there's a higher law, right, then it already includes the lower laws, so therefore we don't have to worry about it. Just like we were reading about the different levels of the brahmachari. And so he, according to Brahma Kshatriya Vaishya. So, because a devotee is a Brahmin because of understanding Brahman or Krishna, right? Then that means the rules that fit to Brahmins, those are the ones that apply to Vaishnavas. And other ones are not so important. As lifestyle, always remember, when it says that there's laws governing these four, that for the devotee, then as a lifestyle or ashram, then we would follow the Brahminical. Right? Does that make sense? But as Varna, no, that's just the way economics works. Right? How does the business work? The laborers say how things should go and the boss just listens? The laborers put together a committee like that, and then they tell the boss what's going to happen, and then he gets it done for them. That's business? It'll ever work? What do you think? We could put out a book. Would it be hailed? Would Warren Buffett say, wow, hey, I never thought of that? Right? It just has nothing to do with reality. Right? Does that make sense? So there is a hierarchy. The person who is in charge is there to create direction. He has the skill in money. He knows how money is made. All the other people know how to do their part within it. Like the guy knows how to go out and buy things nicely, but he doesn't know how to sell it. Or another person knows how to sell it nicely. Another person knows how to package it nicely. Or another person knows how to make the customers comfortable. But none of them know how to overall run the business. Right? I remember, it was interesting, you walk into these big department stores. You know, you go into Marks and Spencer's or into Saks Fifth Avenue, Bloomingdale's. Some of these big, big places, Macy's. Macy's bought the next block. They had the whole block. They bought the next block, right? Put, you know, bridges across. So it's one. It's monstrous, you know. But you can walk through the whole thing, and all you see is people, right? And these big ones, no? Like they go into, like, have you ever been in Harrods? Right? You know, every five steps, there's another person that works there. Right? But all you're looking at is the help. You're not once seeing the Vaishya. You know, or the group of Vaishyas that work together, the partners. You're not seeing, they're all just the hired help. Thousands of them. Right? But none of them could run that business. But each one does their particular area very expertly. Does this make sense? So that's why in Varna, then you have to have Brahma Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra. It's just a matter, we may complain about it, but that's just the way it works. Right? And you work for a Vaishya. And the Vaishyas have to work under the rule of the Kshatriyas. The Kshatriyas don't like it, they close your business down. They revoke your license. They come and they, you know, figure out you haven't paid your tax properly in 10 years and take all your money. You know, besides that, they put you in jail in the meantime. Right? Does that make sense? It's just how it works. And we don't complain about it. Right? But if we mention devotional service as God's laws, oh, then we have problems. This is the disease in actuality. Like that? We're just being practical, following the rules of the nation. Well, you know, we're in America, we follow those laws. We're in England, we follow those. We're in Germany, we follow those. Right? But the point is God makes the laws. Everything else then falls in line under that. Right? Does that make sense? So is this okay, or is this getting scary? If it's scary, then you shouldn't be in the class, because this is just brahmacharya. This is going to get more scary. But if this is comfortable, that you understand, okay, there's a form to this. God has some way he's putting this together. Like that. And so now this is why it makes sense. Then it's okay. Then this is inspiring to see how well organized is God's universe. And then we can understand why there's so much bad karma, because people don't follow this. You know what I'm saying? You know, you have people that go out and this and that and eat junk, you know, but they're hungry, so they eat it, this, that. They just eat anything, anywhere. There's no reverence, but the people come together, they have their dinner, everyone has to be there, you have to be dressed properly, you have to behave properly, you have to be there on time. Generally, you'll find, they're healthy as people. Right? Think about it. You know? So why? Because they're actually unknowingly following God's law. Right? And these other people, you know, they're not. The business person or this or that. They're not. Why not? Because it's either, you know, the business is more important than the meal, or, you know, you just eat whatever you can get, but, you know, you don't really appreciate it. Does that make sense? So you see, the people that can just stop, they may be very busy, big managers, big this, big that, but at dinner they can just sit and enjoy the company, enjoy the food, relax. They're nice people. Right? It's just their piety. They have it left over from previous life, so they can appreciate that. Right? And we'll think, oh no, it's because he does this in the business, that's why he's successful. No, it's because he's actually a pious person. But he doesn't know, so he's an illusion. Right? Does that make sense? So he's following the piety, so he's getting some benefit from it, but it's not dynamic because he doesn't know it's a rule. So sometimes he may fall, sometimes he might not. Right? So that's the advantage of knowing what you should do. Let him not give to any man what he leaves, and beware of eating between the two meal times. Right? If you eat between meals, then you know, you're not actually digesting the last meal, and if you do it, it'll ruin your appetite for the next one. So you throw off the regulation, and you know, you end up overeating like this. So it's just bad for the health, right? Does that make sense? So here, the laws of honor tell you don't eat between meals. You know, it's not, so when your mommy tells you, you know, don't eat all the snacks in between, she's actually following the laws of honor, right? Doesn't know it, but that's why. It's practical. Let him not overeat himself. Notice that, let him not overeat himself. It doesn't mean when you're serving prasad, you don't get the others to overeat. You know, serving more, but you don't overeat. Right? So if everybody follows it, and everybody's trying to get you to overeat, it works out, because you won't overeat, but they're trying to give you as much as you want. Right? Nor go anywhere without having purified himself after his meal. Right? Always, oh, don't go. It means you eat, you clean yourself, then you go somewhere. You don't eat and then go. Right? So then, you know, sitting in the back of your limo with your cereal and eating that on the way to, you know, school or work, then that's not really going to work. That's not advised here. Even though you're very good at it, so when you hit the brakes, you move your cereal like that so it doesn't spill, and then you move back when it starts, and you know, I mean, it's like that. You can learn those things. But it's not recommended. Excessive eating is prejudicial to health, to fame, and to bliss in heaven. Right? Because the senses aren't controlled, so you're not going to get to heaven. You know, it's you're not going to have good health in this life, because overeating, you won't digest it, it'll make you sick. And to fame, because people consider you overeat, so you're fat or you're sick or something like that. It prevents the acquisition of spiritual merit and is odious among men. One ought, for these reasons, to avoid it carefully. So overeating's just, you know, improper. Everyone think you're... It means like in English, you have a special word for overeating. It's called gluttony, right? You know, he's a glutton. He eats too much. You know, he's too overzealous in eating. You know, beyond the eating's more important than actually, you know, properly interacting in that. Achman. Let a Brahman always sip water out of the part of the hand, Tirtha, sacred to Brahman, or out of that sacred to Ka, Prajapati, or out of that sacred to the gods, but never out of that sacred to the manes. Right? So out of the heart, Tirtha, sacred to Brahman, that means the part at the wrist. So the water is sipped that way. Right? So then, I say. Where'd we go? Okay, Ka will be out of that side, out of the gods, will be out of this side, but out of this way, then that is for the... Oh no, excuse me, I think this way is for the mains. Like that. So, in other words, you sip the water from the back, you know, tipping the hand towards him. So that would mean if you're doing demigod worship like that, then you might use these other ones. Means for the Karmakandi. But it's recommended. But the Brahma shouldn't out of the side for the mains. Right? It's just not used. They call that part at the root of the thumb, the Tirtha sacred to Brahman. At the root of the little finger, the Tirtha sacred to Ka, Prajapati. At the tips of the finger, the Tirtha sacred to the gods. And that below, between the index and the thumb, the Tirtha sacred to the mains. Let him sip water thrice. Next, thrice wipe his mouth. And lastly, touch with water the cavities of the head, the seat of the soul, and the and and the head. You know, like when you're doing the full Achman, then you're doing all the cavities of the head, and then all these, right? Well, so that's standard. So Achman is a Vedic ritual. So Pancharatra pulls that. But as we go through, you'll see things that Vedic Prabhupada's talked about them, or the Pancharatra talks about them. If the Pancharatra's talking about it, it means it's the Vedic elements that have been lifted because they're directly in connection with worshipping the Lord. Right? The Pancharatra doesn't deal with those aspects that aren't connected to deity worship. Right? Okay. He who knows the sacred law and seeks purity shall always perform the rite of sipping with water, neither hot nor frothy, with the prescribed tirtha in a holy, lonely place, and turning to the east or to the north. Right? Because sometimes east is not available, so then north. Right? Because you always have some direction, you know, you can face. That. Okay. Okay, not hot means the water's been sitting out or something, so it's not, it's going to be, you know, whatever's inside is going to start growing. If it's frothy, means they've already grown. Right? Like that. So in other words, clear, clean water. If it's cool, means then it's good. Okay. Right, so it already includes the element of, how you say, hygiene. Right. I say. So in other words, non-pathogenic water. A Brahmin is purified by water that reaches his heart. A Kshatriya by water touching his throat. A Vaishya by water taken into his mouth. And a Shudra by water touched by with the extremity of his lips. So, in other words, to get water to the heart in Achman means you have to put the right amount, sip it, and concentrate on it when you swallow it. Only then you'll notice it gets to the heart. It won't get all the way to your stomach. A drop of water, how far can it get? Right? And if you're not so you get there. It's gotten into the mouth, the Vaishya. Shudra is because he doesn't know what he's doing, so he just gets it to the touches. Like you give the Achman cup to some people who don't know anything. They'll just kind of like, they'll just copy it. But they're purified by that because they don't know. Right? So then the Brahman, the concentration is the most, so therefore he's purified when it reaches the heart, because then the level of purity that a Brahman can attain needs that level of focus. Right? Does that make sense? Because then after that you have manasapuja, you have all these different things that require focus. If it's not there, then it's not going to happen. Further considerations. A twice born man is called upavitin when his right arm is raised and the sacrificial thread, string, or the dress passed under it rests on the left shoulder. When his left arm is raised and the string of the dress passed under it rests on the right shoulder, he is called prakin avitin and nivitin when it hangs down straight from the neck. Right? So, I said, the right arm is raised means you put the Brahman thread on, because to put it on, you have to put your right arm up, then it goes on the shoulder, goes this way. Okay, so then here. Okay, and Upavitin is one who worships Vishnu or the Devatas. Prakin Avitin is one who worships the forefathers, the ghosts. And a Nivitin is one who worships kings and the like. So then, when it's on the right, then that means it's worship of Vishnu. They're going to the left, that's, you put it that way, like when they do the Shraddha rites and that, they put the thread around the other way. Right? And when you're worshiping the king and that, then they'll put it in the middle. Does that make sense? So then, those who worship Vishnu always wear it to the right. On the left shoulder, going to hang it to the right. That's also when you put your chudder under the arm, then it's always the right arm is out. But if you're doing the ghost, you'll put your left shoulder out and put it the other way. So that's why in, you know, your standard society, you don't expose the left shoulder, cover the right. You cover expose the right shoulder, cover the left. Does that make sense? What happened?
He came running with a bucket, placed it, then moved it so that the smoke could get in here, and then he came and took it away.
But we still have a bucket.
Yeah, we have one.
Oh, it was the second bucket?
Yeah.
Oh, and he brought it down for the class and found we already had one. I guess so. His girdle, the skin which serves as his upper garment, his staff, his sacred thread, and his water part he must throw into water when they have been damaged, and take others reciting sacred formulas. So all these elements that he's gotten through the ritual, right? So that's the girdle, the skin, the staff, sacred thread, and the water pot. Those then, when they're broken, then they're put into water. So in other words, sacred items are always placed into water. That's the first option. Right? Yes.
Where it came from when 890s we was burning the pictures and like that.
Burning the pizzas.
Pictures.
Burning
the mantras
pictures.
And like that. All the yabba bags and
burning
like
the pictures. I'm not sure. I mean, I know that when the Christians went into Alexandria, they did that. No? The library? Yeah, they burned everything like that. I think the Muslims did that once at one other great library. I think in Babylon. Like that. The Nazis used to do that also. It's a popular thing.
Because we did it, we have some...
They're looking at it that it's just like you cremate the body. You know, so it'd be... Putting into water is your first option. If you don't have that, then they'd use cremation. You know, so they'd use the fire. But the general rule is that most of the time, no one knew that putting it into the water was an option.
You know, nobody told us.
Yeah, so therefore just burning becomes the standard thing. So that's why you have to know what the standard is. If you don't have that, then what's the next thing to do? Like that. But otherwise you can bury it. I think the Jewish tradition is the, books are buried. You know, because they bury people, so they bury the books. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
No, tradition can also bury.
That'll also work. That'll also work. You know, like this Goswami, is a Grunta Samadhi. They put him into it. Like that. So you could also bury.
Now you need a stand is to put a dead body to water, right?
No, because it's not sacred. Is it sacred? Yeah, you're understanding the point. The point is not what you do with the body. The conversation is about what you do with things that are sacred. So sacred things generally go into water.
Not body.
No, this is the conversation is about sacred things, not about what we do with the dead body. That will come up. Don't worry. There'll be a page full of rules on that. If we don't, you know what I'm saying? Like that. The bodies are generally burned, right? Because they create disease. So if you burn them, it gets rid of that. Second thing is that the person's attached to it. So if you burn it, there's nothing left to be attached to, right? Third thing is other people are attached to it, other than the soul that was residing in it. So now they know they're dead, but if it's burned, then it really brings it home that everything's temporary, right? So therefore, that's followed for the body, right? Does that make sense? Is that okay? Keshanta. Okay, so that was we went through the sacraments. So what we're doing is we're going through the order of the sacraments. See, this is a Vedic method. Is that you take the line of something, and in that line of expression, you explain everything as you go. It doesn't work for Westerners though. But somehow, like one time to explain everything that goes on in the Gurukul, I started from the boys waking up in the morning. You know what time they wake up and that, and then what they do, and then why all those things are done, and then it gets to their dress. So you define the uniform. And then after that they do work, then why do service, dham seva, and everything like that, the importance of it. Then study, you get to study, then, you know, what are the different Vedic topics, and you go through the whole day, you know, so from when they wake up till they go to sleep. So it covers everything they do, and why they do everything, what's the background. But anybody I showed it to was kind of like, what's this? You know, that was all other educators, of course. You know, so said, well, you know, why can't you just say that, you know, this is a uniform, or this, you know, you have to have different documents for everything, then it's okay. But that's one thing that just, but that's how the Vedic works. So we're starting with the samskaras, right? In other words, you're going through the samskaras. You're conceived, right? Then you grow up like that. Then you go to Upanayana, you go to Gurukul. So Brahmacharya life is then defined. Then after Gurukul, then this Keshanta, and then after that, then you graduate, so then you become a Grihastha. Then there's marriage ceremony, right? And then from the Grihastha, you go into Vanaprastha, then there's the Sannyasa ceremony, right? And then at some point along there, then, you know, the chapter ends, because everybody explained before that, whatever samskar they're in, they're all dead. So that kind of ends it. Does that make sense? So the first six chapters are actually going through in the order of the samskaras. But within this, now we're going through, you know, because there's more of them in the beginning, so you see it more prominently, like that. Keshanta, reconfirming one's commitment to the vows of studentship. The ceremony called Keshanta, clipping the hair, is ordained for a Brahmin in the 16th year from conception, for a Kshatriya in the 22nd, and for a Vaishya 2 years later than that. Right. So, means this is the same as Chudakarna. It's the same ceremony that the small child had when they were either one or three. Remember we were saying about shaving the head. That one you're shaving from impurities from birth. This one, Keshanta, is that you are, how you say, making that commitment to following these vows. Right. So then the Brahmin is considered mature at 16. Right? And the Kshatriya would do it later, the Vaishya later than that. Having reached adulthood, a student shows his personal conscious commitment to the continuation of the vows of studentship through the ritual of shaving his head and beard. Right? So now, at 16, technically he's an adult. He could, on one sense, graduate, but he performs this rite of Keshanta to continue his study. But now it'll be because he wants to be doing it, not just because his parents put him there. Right? That's what their family does. Is said, no, it's because he wants to further study.
That would go from 16 to 25.
Yeah. So up to 16, it's because, you know, just because that's what you're supposed to do. Then from 16 to 25, that's because you want to do it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It means, in other words, the parents are interested, but now is you figured out what the parents are talking about. You know what I'm saying? Took you a few years, but you finally got it, right? You know, that's the idea. So when you understand that, then it's done.
Maharaj, isn't that age for the Kshatriyas and Vaishya the time when they would usually start performing their duties?
Now, generally at 16, they probably wouldn't do Keshanta. You know what I'm saying? Because the normal thing is 16 is when Kshatriyas and Vaishyas would generally graduate. And again, get married, right? But that means 16 is that's the Vedic age of maturity. But your modern age is generally off by 2 years. And the interesting thing is generally, it's interesting to note is that the Western children generally are also off all the ages that are mentioned by 2 years. You know, so that they set it at 18, that's there. But then it depends where you go. In Australia, it's younger. Like, yeah, I think you can stop going to school at 15. You want. You can take up a job and stuff like that, but most other countries don't allow that.
In Finland, it's 16.
Finland is 16.
England, 16.
16 now. Okay. America is still 18. Like that. Because they don't want other. Otherwise, it means these guys, 16-year-old, to work for half the price.
That's fair.
You know, so therefore, then they don't want too many of them in the market, you know. So it's.
So what about the girls?
What about for girls? What? When do they shave their beard?
No.
Keshanta. This is Keshanta now.
Keshanta
means when he shaves his head and beard. So you want to know. See, the thing is girls never grow beards, so they don't have to do Keshanta.
No, I mean, the girl also. I mean, like in winter time, they also get educated, or you know, they have got just 16 years old, or you know, more education after 16 years old, something like that. Is there some educational system for girls?
Is there an educational system? Have we discussed the educational system for boys yet?
For Brahmachari.
No, but have we discussed the education yet? No. This, we're still on the just what is the rituals of Brahmachari, or the ordinances of being a Brahmachari. How he dresses, his begging and that. In other words, everything up to now has been connected with the samskara. So, what you're asking is the wrong question. Right? Your question should be, okay, these samskaras are done for the boys. Are they done for girls?
Yeah.
That's the question. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So, the next point that's being made, 2.5, is sacraments for women. Okay? So, you know. This whole series of ceremonies must be performed for females also in order to sanctify the body at the proper time and in the proper order, but without the recitation of the sacred texts. Riti. That these ceremonies are to be performed without the recitation of sacred texts indicates that the chanting of the Vedic mantras is performed without swaras, or the proper sequence of intonations. Right. So in other words, the mantras are used, but they're not used in that sense. They're used in you would chant them like you would Gita shlokas or like that. For women, the benefits of Upanayana are regained through the marriage rite, as explained in the next verse. Right? So in other words, everything up to here then the girls are doing, because they do chudakarna. The second one is just to confirm brahmacharya. Right? Does that make sense? So girls aren't brahmacharis. It's just they're either they're unmarried or they're married. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore there's no need of keshanta. You know, they don't take a vow that I'm going to continue to not be married, you know, like that. It's not an important conviction. No? But for a boy, it's necessary. He has to have that conviction that I, on my own, am going to be determined to be fixed in this. Does that make sense? Because the girls, whatever they're into, they're focused on it. It's the boys that, you know, may or may not be focused. Does that make sense? Right, yeah. So, and then benefits of Upanayana regained to marriage also. So the next verse, the nuptial ceremony, or marriage ceremony, is stated by to be the Vedic sacrament for women and to be equal to the initiation, serving the husband, or equivalent to the residence in the house of the teacher, and the household duties the same as the daily worship of the sacred fire. So the point is, in the Vedic, it is equal. One gets the same benefit. Because, I mean, when you say equal, what are you worried about? That you got to do the thing, or you got the benefit of the thing?
The benefit.
The benefit, right? So the point is the benefit is gotten. So the marriage ceremony is equivalent to the Upanayanam ceremony for the boy. So she gets all the benefit of that, right? Because it's considered, you know, one of the uplifting samskaras, right? So that's there. By serving the husband is equal to the residence in the house of the teacher. So that the boy lived in the house, the ashram, served the teacher personally, did all those things, she gets the same benefit by marriage. Right? And then by performing the household duties, it's the same as the brahmacharya, as every day performing the Vedic yagyas. She gets the same benefit by performing the household duties, right? But the one is within ritual, you know, it's very, very organized in that. And the other is by doing things that are natural to the nature. Does this make sense? So the results are equal, but the methods are different. Because there's no such thing as the men and women exactly like the same things in the same way. Even if there's an interest in the one thing, there's a difference of how they look at it. You know what I'm saying? There may be a common item, but the perspective is different. Does that make sense?
The comprehension of this principle would eliminate a lot of the competition.
Yeah, no, it would eliminate, but you have to look at it, it's the results that's wanted. So therefore, when you say, okay, the women want to give the class, so what's the result they're looking for? Because just to give a class, just to do something, and the joy of just doing it, that's only a masculine thing. Women, it's what's the experience and what is the result gained. Does that make sense? So what results are they looking for? The man is, he gave the class is done. He's accomplished that. But the woman is the experience of giving the class, and after the class, what's going to be the, you know, the response, the mood of the people. So even what they're looking for is completely different. So what do you mean equality? Does that make sense? So therefore, that's you don't function on these elements. You function on, you know, devotional service. Right? And then what's according to nature? So if someone has an ability to give a nice class in that, who do we care if they're a man or a woman? But just to give the class because one is a woman, that's pretty bodily conscious, no? You know, every Saturday it's, you know, the women's day to give class. So that means you have to have the body of a woman to give the class. It's not whether you can give a class or not, or whether what you say anybody wants to listen to. You know what I'm saying? Because the other days you have class, it's not that, you know what I'm saying? Because then you drop it down into the body. Does that make sense? So that element is there. So it's not based on that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because we see here is when the men are involved in these things, then the formality of it is great. And there's no art. You understand? But when the women are involved, then there's always the element of art is added. Aesthetics, relationships, you know, the experiences. That's always part of it. So that's why there's certain things that only men do, because there isn't those aspects. So they're not going to be satisfied with it anyway. Does that make sense? Conclusion of the rules of initiation. Thus has been described the rule of the initiation of the twice born, which indicates a new birth and sanctifies. Learn now to what duties they must afterwards apply themselves. So this is this. So now that they have gone through this ceremony, then what are their duties? Right? So in other words, if it's just Upanayanam, they have these duties. And if they've done Keshanta, means they're taking the vow to continue these duties.
So that's the vana. Talk about the vana. The different vanas we want to talk about.
No. This is now the ordinances of Brahmacharya.
Oh.
Means in other words, now that they have Upanayana, what is he going to do like that? But so those are just the rules of Upanayana. Topic 3, the ordinances of studentship. Having performed the rite of initiation, the teacher must first instruct the pupil in the rules of personal purification, of conduct, of the fire worship, and of the twilight devotions. Right? After the celebration of the Upanayanam ceremony, the preceptor, after reciting Mahabharati, should teach the disciple the Vedas as well as good and pure conduct. So we see here is the first thing that he's instructing is personal purification and conduct. Right? Because when that's there, then behavior and interaction will be proper. Next after that, then will be, you know, the worship of the fire, worship of the deity, and chanting of the Gayatri Mantra. Right? In other words, the spiritual activities, and then the cleanliness and conduct to be able to practice that. So that's considered the first area. Right? If that's in place, then the next will be study, education. Okay. But a student who is about to begin the study of the Veda shall receive instruction after he has sipped water in accordance with the institutes of the sacred law, has made the Brahmanjali. Brahmanjali means the pranam mudra. Has put on a clean dress, right? You don't just wear a gumshoe or anything like that. You wear proper clothes. And has brought his organs under due control. In other words, now he's going to behave himself. His organs under control means the mind's in control. At the beginning and end of a lesson in the Veda, he must always clasp both the feet of his teacher, and he must study joining his hands. That is called the Brahmanjali, joining the palms for the sake of the Veda. With crossed hands, he must clasp the feet of the teacher and touch the left foot with his left hand, the right foot with his right hand. Right? We understand where that one comes in, where you see these devotees offer obeisances and go like this. How often does a spiritual master stand with his feet that far apart? I mean, think about it. I mean, that's there. That means he would have to be standing like that. You understand? So it's just an exaggeration of the mind. You stand with your feet like this. So now I can touch the right foot with the left and the left with the right like that. Because the toes are right there. You understand? So that is this rule was found out. So you see devotees do it. And they'll say, no, because you have to touch this. I mean, how far apart do they keep their feet? You know what I'm saying? So the point is that's why the hand is put on top of each other. These elements are there. This is done like this. It's because that means this is touching that foot, this is touching this foot. But it's done like that. It's not a gross thing. We like to make our rituals gross, right? We'll complain about rituals, but if we can ourselves, from our own mind, make them more obvious, then that's perfect. But if we have to do like that, oh, that's so ritualistic. But to do like that, oh, no, that's not ritualistic. Oh, that's just Bob. You know, it's a problem. But to him who is about to begin study, the teacher always unwearied must say, ho, recite. He shall leave off when the teacher says, let a stoppage take place. In other words, the teacher means you don't start until he says to start, and you end when he says to end. But at the same time, as he must always be enthusiastic to teach. That's the point. The Brahmins always teach. They may not learn. That's what we were saying before. The question was, what about the Kshatriyas? The Kshatriyas is just like, if you didn't figure it out the first time, they don't have the time. Right? So you have to be very, very good. Like that. But the Brahmin has to put, you know, they learn, great. If they don't, you repeat it. You keep repeating it. Let him always pronounce the syllable Om at the beginning and at the end of a lesson in the Veda. For unless the syllable Om precedes, the lesson will slip away from him. And unless it follows, it will fade away. Right? So if you say, don't say at the beginning, it'll slip away. You know, you can't catch it. Right? So the knowledge being given will just slip away. And even if you've got it, if you don't say it at the end, then it'll fade away. You know it, but your memory will just go. So we see, it's like Prabhupada before we would start classes. And it seems Jairata Madhava. So the holy name has been chanted before. Right? At the end of the lecture, what would Prabhupada do? That or? Much of the time, he's just giving a Bhagavatam lecture. He just goes, Hare Krishna. So it's called Sampat. I think we mentioned here. And it doesn't use the word Sampat. Sampat means it's between the two. You know, it's like a... Yes, you know, Om is at the beginning, Om is at the end. So in the Vedic mantras, it's always Sampat. It starts with Om and ends with Om. Om, this. Om, Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. So it's always Om and Om. Right? So for us, Hare Krishna is more important. Right? That makes sense. We use Om in the class just because when you have a group of people, you start Om, it catches everyone's attention. So when you do start chanting Hare Krishna, everyone's chanting. And it also gets the same note, because otherwise if it's too, I'd say, cacophonous would be the...
Cacophonous.
It's just too... You know what a cacophony is?
Yeah, the cacophony.
Yeah, it's just all... Everybody's on a different note and that. It sounds bad. So, therefore, we use it like that's what it's for. Okay. Yeah. So, Vritu, without preceding the lesson with the sacred syllable Om, you know, in other words, with the holy name, you will not be able to grasp the subject matter. Similarly, unless Pranava is chanted at the end of the lesson, the student will forget what he has learned. Right? So it's a science. It's just the practical. Origin of the Omkar. Prajapati, the lord of creatures, milked out, as it were, from the three Vedas, the sounds A, U, and M, because Om is made of three syllables. And the Vritis, Burbu, Vaswa, they're also coming from the same. Right?
Krishna is the A, right?
Yeah, Krishna is A, the internal potency is U, and M is us. There's also more scientific, means more detail. There's also the Chandra, and then the Bindu. So there's actually five parts. The other, I don't remember what they mean like that, but I think it's explained by maybe, I think it's Vishwanatha Baladev explained. Prajapati here refers to Lord Vishnu, the Lord of all creatures. In the sacred syllable Om, which is composed of letters A, U, and M, A represents the Supreme Lord, U, the Lord's internal potency, and M, the living entities. Among the Vyahritis, Bhu refers to the earth, Bhuva, the space between the heaven and the earth, and Swa, the heavenly planets. So those are first, because there you have Om, and then you have Bhur, Bhuva, Swa, right? But it's always in these three, right? And then you have the Gayatri, which is in three parts, three padas, right? So it's all following that. And then after that, then comes the Purusha Shukta. So it's all coming out of this. Yes?
Maharaj, in the Bhagavatam, there's mention of seven Vyahritis, Bhuva, Swa, and then the next four planetary levels.
It means you also have that, means, but I'm not sure how they do that. It's It means the tantrics focus on that exclusively. That's their... means they take the Brahma Gayatri and break it down into its 24 syllables. And then each one is a different part of the universe. So the whole creation is complete within that. But for us, it's not as important. But the mechanics are still there. That's the way it is. Just we don't focus on it. So. But if it's... Yeah. It's there. Moreover, Prajapati, who dwells in the highest heaven, Parameshtin, milked out, as it were, the Rig verse sacred to Savitri, which begins with the word Tat, from the three Vedas, 1 foot from each. So then Savitri means the Brahma Gayatri. Then that has been drawn also from the Vedas, but the first pada from one, the second pada, and the third pada. Then, not knowing how it... Yeah, then Bhur. Bhur would have to be Bhu. Swar would be Lakshmi. Bhuvar would be Nila. Because Samaveda, some will say, it means Samaveda is used when in the death ceremony, Samaveda mantras are used. So then it's said that when Samaveda mantras are heard being chanted, if there's any other Vedic mantras chanted, then you stop all other chanting. Some will look at it, because it's not their Veda, that because of they're used in the death ceremony, therefore they are connected with the forefathers, so it's inauspicious, so you don't chant. But Krishna mentions of the three Vedas, he is the Samaveda. So it's actually because it's superior to the others in that way. You know, but otherwise, they'll make a connection somehow. A Brahmana learned in the Veda who recites during both twilights that syllable and that verse preceded by the Vyahritis gains the whole merit which recitation of the Vedas confers. So in other words, by chanting the Gayatri, you get the benefit of studying the whole Veda. Right? That makes sense. So naturally, the recitation of the Brahma Gayatri at the three Sundays of the day is here described. At the twilights, this recitation is to be accompanied by the full performance of the Sandhya Bandana rituals. However, at noon, the chanting is performed without such rituals. Once you chant the syllable Om, followed by the Vyahritis, then the Brahma Gayatri verse. Right? So this will be where you get the confusion of sometimes it'll say about the three, and sometimes it'll say about the two Sundays. So those who don't understand, they will, when they come across the verse about the Gayatri being chanted twice, the morning and evening, means that the Brahma Gayatri itself is only recited twice. And so this thing of three times a day, that's not necessary. But it's chanted three times a day. It's only in the morning and the evening the full rituals that accompany it go. And at noontime, you just purify yourself, sit, and chant the Gayatri. Does that make sense? Because otherwise there's a whole Sandibandana means that you're purifying yourself, so many mantras like that, then you're invoking the Gayatri, then you're worshipping the Gayatri, chanting the Gayatri, then sending the mantra back, and all these different things. So the Sandibandana ceremony itself, depending upon, you know, what Veda or what Shaka you're connected with and all that, or how much you get, it can take 5 to 10 minutes. Then you have the chanting of the Gayatri. Right? Because for the Brahmins, and previously, the chanting of the Gayatri was their japa. So it wasn't a problem. They didn't chant this and chanted their japa. This was the japa. You know, so we're chanting 10, but they'll chant 108 or 1,008. Like that. That would be their japa. Does this make sense? That's also how the wrapping the thread around the thumb comes from. It's not that you have to wrap around the thumb to chant the mantra, right? Because ladies aren't wrapping the thread around the thumb to chant the mantra. They're chanting the mantra, so it can be chanted without it. The point is that they would wrap it around to count how many times, right? Does that make sense? So you can do so many, you can do 10 on the fingers, right? But then if I wrap it around the thumb 10 times, then I go one, I unwrap it one, then I do the next, I unwrap it one, I do the next, I unwrap it one. That way I get 108. Does that make sense? So as a tradition, people wrap the thread around the thumb, which is fine. You know what I'm saying? But it's technically, that's where its origin is for counting. So since you're going to count, then the thread's put. It also helps concentration because you know something's going on. You know, it creates an environment, right? A twice-born man who daily repeats those 3,000 times outside the village will be freed after a month, even from the great guilt, as a snake from its sloth. Right? So the repetition is 3, refers to the Om, the Vyaratis, and the Brahma Gayatri. Right? And the fun part, each one of them is in 3, and there's 3 of them. Right? Om has 3 parts, the Vyaratis have 3 parts, and the Gayatri has 3 parts. Right? So they say the 3 that refer to those, each of those that have 3 parts. Right? And the thread, it also has 3 threads. So it's one thing. Right? The Brahmin, the Kshatriya, and the Vaishya neglect the recitation of that Rig verse, and the timely performance of the rites prescribed for them will be blamed among virtuous men. Right? They'll be looked down upon because they're not actually up to the standard. I mean, they're doing their duties nicely as a king or as a businessman, but they'll be looked down upon from the area of ashram because as their lifestyle, it's not very high. They may be very rich and powerful, but as a person, they're not very qualified. Note that the 3 imperishable Mahavyaratis preceded by the syllable Om and followed by the 3-footed Savitri are the portal of the Veda and the gate leading to the union with Brahman. So that means there were portals before internet. So this is quite an old concept. All they did was take it online. Right? And Bengal, they've always had portals. Right? So the chanting of the Gayatri is your connection with your entrance into the study of the Veda. And it's your entrance into transcendence. Because that's what the Brahma Gayatri deals with. Taking one off the material, the external platform, the bodily platform, and establishing you on the spiritual platform. But specifically in that, when we say the spiritual platform, we mean minus the Purusha Bhav, that I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right, because the impersonalists will be on the Brahman platform, but they still consider I'm the controller and enjoyer. It's very subtle, so all the natural good qualities are manifest. Right, does this make sense? But it's not. So the Brahma Gayatri removes the Purusha Bhav. That's the element. Right. So that's why traditionally women didn't chant the Brahma Gayatri. The Pancharatra Gayatris, yes, but the Brahma Gayatri, no. But because the Western lays means Prabhupada wasn't going to give the Brahma Gayatri. He gave it to the boys and not to the girls. So then when they found out about that, they actually went on strike. They didn't come to the temple for 10 days. They wouldn't come, wouldn't do anything like this and that. So Prabhupada said, okay, then they come and he gave it to them. Because the point is why would they do that? Like that. So the point is you know, mentality, they're as much the controller and enjoyers as the men, so therefore the Brahma Gayatri will work for them. So it's not a technically a glory. You know what I'm saying?
Prabhupada was most liberal.
Yeah, well, it's liberal, but I'm saying is that the mentality was there, therefore it'll work for that. The Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wouldn't give it because it tends to make the hard heart hard. Because it's retraction from the material rather than just you're transforming from material rasa to spiritual rasa. But here you're pulling out of material rasa means there is no rasa. Right? So it's a platform that the master is going to deal with, then move to the spiritual. Means to the spiritual rasa. Does that make sense? That's why it's not. But because of the way the environment is, it works. It's not a problem. So it's been authorized by the acharya. So it's not a problem. Right? Does that make sense? But that's why we shouldn't then try to use these things. You know, in other words, don't use dharma to establish a dharma. Right? You use dharma to understand why dharma works the way it does. Does that make sense?
Well, you mentioned some extra rituals for the Gayatri. We never learned that.
We never learned because our focus is Pancharatra, not Vedic. Because we're chanting Hare Krishna. So that's actually our japa. Okay. Means this is the support to elevate us to the transcendental position. Right? Because it said from the spiritual position, then devotional service becomes very easy. So the Brahma Gayatri is for that. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So that's what we're saying. The master go from the one to the next, and the next like that. So it's there. But if this is your japa, then that ritual, you know, has more meaning. It's more meaningful. But for us, it's not so important. One does it nice, but generally, it's hard enough to get time to chant your Gayatri, let alone add in another 10 minutes of ritual. You need an Akshman cup. You need your seat. You're going to have another thing that to pour the water into because you have to do tarpanas. You can't just pour it on the ground. So that means you have to have one of those little copper cups and then your Achman cup and your kusagrass asan. So that's not easy. So better just sit down when you can and chant your Gayatri, you know, like at 3 p.m. in the car after you've been at the program, right? You know, while driving down the highway, right? You know, so like that. Does that make sense?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. He who daily recites that verse untired during 3 years will enter after death the highest Brahman, move as free as air, and assume an ethereal form. Right? So one is just 3 years untired, that'll bring one to that transcendental platform. Right? But then also highest Brahman means you can also go back to Godhead. So the point is that by chanting japa, then it, you know, one becomes qualified. Okay, no, yeah, time's up. No, we won't get the next verse. Okay, is everyone doing okay?
So, yes. Chanting Hare Krishna is Pancharatri Gaur.
No, chanting Hare Krishna is Bhagavad.
Bhagavad. Brahma Mantra is...
That's Vedic.
Well, then which is Pancharatri?
The Gayatri is for deity worship. Means the other 6 mantras. Right? If you have second initiation, that makes sense. If you don't worry about it. Okay? They're also Vedic mantras, but it's just the Pancharatra lifts them, because the Pancharatra is Vedic. It's just those things that are specifically focused on Vishnu. Like that. So then that's what we call Pancharatra. So Pancharatra is the essence of the Veda. Like that. So that's why we generally look at things from that the Bhagavata and Pancharatra view. So even we're dealing with the Veda, with the Vedic element, we're looking at it from the Pancharatric and Bhagavat perspective.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Samaveta
Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jayanitai
Govardhana ki.